morning, early birds. You've caught The Worm, a podcast from Yellowstone Public Radio, rounding up reporting from our newsroom and Montana Public Radio. Today we have stories about the expanded area where cattle producers are required to vaccinate animals at risk for brucellosis, changes to the Endangered Species Act, and Steve Daines' reaction to the Trump administration's pick to head the Bureau of Land Management, William Perry Pendley. It's Wednesday, August 14th. I'm your host, Jess Sheldahl. A Montana judge has ordered an FBI informant to wear a wig or hat, false eyeglasses, and fake facial hair when testifying against a man who prosecutors say wanted to avenge the death of Muslims killed in shootings at two New Zealand mosques. Federal prosecutors had asked the courtroom to be sealed to the public for the witness's testimony in the upcoming trial for the safety of the informant and the informant's family in the Middle East. Montana is expanding the area where cattle producers are required to vaccinate animals at risk for the disease brucellosis. The Montana Department of Livestock will travel the state this month to remind ranchers and address questions ahead of next calving season. Olivia Reingold reports.
In a few weeks, Dr. Eric Liska will travel to Bighorn County to host his first of 10 informational meetings about brucellosis regulations.
It's a reminder to make sure they set up with their veterinarians that next spring, after their cows calve, that they have an opportunity to get them vaccinated before enforcement begins in 2021.
That's when the grace period ends for requirements enacted last October. Previously, only four counties in the Yellowstone area had to vaccinate cattle and domestic bison that were older than a year. Now those rules apply to another six: Bighorn, Broadwater, Carbon, Jefferson, Stillwater, and Sweetgrass counties. The vaccination requirements were expanded to include counties that contain or border an area where infected wildlife have been found. Dr. Liska says most of the infected livestock herds he's worked with are believed to have been infected by wild elk. He says most producers in the state of Montana already vaccinate their females, but
that said, some producers in the 10 counties where the vaccination requirement exists, some of their older females may not be vaccinated already.
He said that could be because of some misconceptions like this one.
If you vaccinate an older animal, older female, that she will be positive on the test for brucellosis.
Dr. Liska says that's no longer the case. Former versions of the vaccine used to give false positives, but the current form does not. It's one of the misunderstandings he hopes to address as he speaks with ag producers from around the Yellowstone area this August and September. Dr. Liska will host an informational meeting in each of the 10 counties where the vaccination requirements will be enforced. More information is available on our website, ypradio.org. For Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Olivia Reingold.
A 14-year-old girl died Monday evening from injuries she received after a rock slide struck her family's vehicle on Glacier National Park's Going to the Sun Road. Park spokesperson Lauren Alley describes the rockfall near the East Tunnel as, quote, significant.
So the rocks were between fist-sized and about 12 inches in diameter. So if you envision that, that's a pretty big-sized rock. And there was enough debris, the park estimates, to fill the back of a pickup truck.
The rocks hit the top of the family's car, shattering its rear windshield, critically injuring the girl. Her parents received significant bruising, and two other children in the car suffered minor injuries. An air ambulance responded to the scene but was unable to airlift the girl because of her unstable condition. The flight paramedics traveled with her in a ground ambulance to Kalispell, but she died en route. The family is from Utah. The girl's name and hometown will be released once family notifications are complete. This isn't the first fatal rock slide in the park. Again, park spokesperson Lauren Alley.
So the last fatal rock fall on the Going to the Sun Road was in 1996. A rock came off the mountains in the Rim Rocks area, which is west of Logan Pass. You know, the area is on the Continental Divide, and rocks do come down fairly regularly from the mountains above.
The mountains above Going to the Sun Road are very steep, and Alley says precisely identifying where the slide originated would be extremely difficult. Alley says the park, while safe for the vast majority of visitors, can sometimes be an unpredictable place where hazardous things can happen in an instant. Going to the Sun Road was closed at the East Tunnel for about 3 hours Monday night while crews cleared the scene. While a federal agency recently reauthorized a poison used in a predator-killing cyanide trap, more states are banning or limiting where they can be used. Rachel Kramer reports that includes around 10 million acres of public land in Wyoming.
The U.S. Department of Agriculture's Wildlife Services agreed last week to a ban of M44 devices on Forest Service land, wilderness areas, and wilderness study areas in Wyoming. The decision is the result of a lawsuit from wildlife advocacy groups. Kent Drake with Wyoming's Department of Agriculture says the new agreement won't make much of a difference to livestock producers. Most of the M44s are used on private property during the lambing and calving season in the spring to kill coyotes, foxes, and feral dogs that prey on livestock. The spring-loaded device sprays sodium cyanide when triggered, which critics say is too risky.
These chemical weapon landmines that are being planted by USDA Wildlife Services to kill coyotes and other predators on public lands is putting the public at risk to become collateral damage.
Eric Mulvar is the executive director of Western Watersheds Project, one of the three nonprofit environmental organizations that filed a lawsuit against Wildlife Services in January. Mulvar says this new agreement reduces that risk for people and pets. It also adds trapping restrictions and more protections for grizzly bears. The agreement requires Wildlife Services to analyze the environmental impacts of killing coyotes and other predators in Wyoming by January 2021. Mulvar says failure to do so means the wildlife advocacy groups can bring the agency back into court. Meanwhile, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency announced last week it would reauthorize the poison in M44s for predator control efforts on an interim basis despite public pushback. A final decision is expected to come after 2021. Currently, around a dozen states allow the devices to be used, including Montana. With Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Rachel Kramer.
A former high school athletic trainer in Mile City who is acknowledged sexually abusing dozens of teenage boys has pleaded guilty to possessing child pornography. The Billings Gazette reports 79-year-old James Jensen pleaded guilty yesterday in Mile City. A housekeeper in the care home where Jensen was living reported seeing the images. Jensen was sentenced to 12 years in federal prison last month for using the internet to aid in his abuse of the boys while he worked as a trainer. Dozens of men have filed a civil lawsuit against Jensen and the school district over the abuse carried out under the guise of improving the boys' athletic performance. The statute of limitations for prosecuting the actual abuse has passed. Jensen's sentencing on the child porn charges is August 28th. The U.S. Interior Department announced changes Monday to how federal agencies will apply the Endangered Species Act. There is concern that the changes could affect Yellowstone grizzly bears' threatened status in the future. Montana Public Radio's Aaron Bolton reports.
Grizzlies' status under the Endangered Species Act has been tied up in courts for years. John Melgren with the Western Environmental Law Center says new changes to the landmark legislation will reduce federal agencies' ability to consider the effects of climate change when making decisions about whether to list or delist a species as threatened or endangered. A previous attempt to delist grizzlies in the Greater Yellowstone ecosystem was halted because a major food source, white bark pine seeds, were found to be in decline due to warming temperatures.
And so with these changes, the federal government would likely have an easier time removing those protections again in the future based on these changes and not needing to consider the effects of climate change because of this change to the definition of foreseeable future.
Changes to protections for threatened species are also raising concern, though they will only affect newly listed plants and animals.
Threatened species and endangered species are both protected from take, which is basically causing any sort of harm to the species. But under the new rule change, threatened species will no longer be protected automatically from take unless the Fish and Wildlife Service specifically grants it that protection.
Currently, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service needs to approve any form of take or harm for each individual species. The Montana Stock Growers Association is applauding that change. The association's natural resource director, Brian Ose.
We think this clarifies and streamlines the ESA so that if something is declared threatened, it allows for flexibility and innovation when dealing with the potential recovery for a species.
Other concerns have been raised about the inclusion of economic factors in analysis for listing species and whether suitable habitat not currently occupied by a threatened or endangered species will be protected in the future. All questions about changes to the ESA are being deferred to the Interior Department. Montana Public Radio has submitted a list of questions, but did not hear back in time for this story. The changes to the ESA are expected to take effect next month, though the reforms are likely to wind up in court. Aaron Bolton, Montana Public Radio News.
The U.S. Interior Department has approved a plan to purchase 7,300 acres of former private timberlands northeast of Missoula. The former Plum Creek Timber Company property was acquired by the Nature Conservancy in 2014, and now, as part of a deal several years in the works, that nonprofit is selling it to the Bureau of Land Management for $5.6 million. Most of that money is coming from the Federal Land and Water Conservation Fund, which uses royalties from offshore oil and gas development to fund outdoor projects. But $2.6 million was raised locally by the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation. Joe Asher with the BLM in Missoula says the agency expects to officially take title of the land in the fall. Plum Creek and the Nature Conservancy have allowed public access for hunting, fishing, snowmobiling, and other recreational uses. Asher says
that kind of use will continue. We'll tweak it a little bit in some areas to try to get the right mix of uses on the land, but the kinds of things that were going on will continue generally.
That includes grazing, timber harvest, and wildfire control activities. The 7,300 acres approved for purchase are part of the 40,000 BLM is planning to acquire from the Nature Conservancy in the Upper Belmont and Gold Creek areas. Asher says the plan is to use land and water conservation funds to purchase all the remaining land for about $24 million. During Senator Steve Daines' stop in Missoula and Kalispell Monday, he was asked whether he supports the Trump administration's pick to head the Bureau of Land Management, William Perry Pendley. Pendley's past support of the sale of public lands concerns many, but Daines called that concern overblown. Montana Public Radio's Aaron Bolton has more.
U.S. Interior Secretary David Bernhardt appointed Pendley late last month. The former private property rights lawyer has a history of advocating for the sale of public lands. That's been a cause for concern for environmental and sportsmen groups as well as others. Missoula House Representative Marilyn Marler was outside of Senator Daines' event in Missoula Monday, holding a sign that read, "No Pendley, no land transfers." Marler says she's heard Daines say that he opposes selling public lands, but
I hear a mixed message because actions speak louder than words, and I don't see him opposing the Pendley appointment.
Inside, Daines deflected a question about his silence on whether he supports Pendley.
And you have a director, the Secretary of Interior, David Bernhardt, who has been adamant in opposition of the transfer of federal lands to the state. Remember, if he were to be confirmed, he serves underneath the secretary, who has been very clear without stuttering on this issue.
Daines was pressed again at a smaller event in Kalispell later Monday, but he said he would refrain from voicing his full opinion until he interviews Pendley for confirmation.
I've not come out against him. I'll have a chance to interview him and make a decision, but I have not found a reason to be against him yet. But I've not come out for him either.
Daines called opposition to Pendley's appointment overblown and reiterated that the right checks and balances will prevent him from selling off large swaths of public land. Pendley will serve in an acting role until his confirmation hearing before the U.S. Senate. Aaron Bolton, Montana Public Radio News.
Just shy of 2.3 million people visited Yellowstone National Park through July this year. That's down about 1.2% from this time last year. July is typically Yellowstone's most popular month, but visits have declined year over year since 2016, when the National Park Service celebrated its centennial with special programs and events geared towards increasing visitation. Northward in Glacier National Park, year-to-date visitation through July also dropped, with 1.68 million visitors. And that's what's happening in Montana today. Check in with Montana Public Radio's Montana Evening News for updates on the news of the day. For Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Jess Sheldahl. We'll have another episode of The Worm for You Early Birds tomorrow morning.
The Worm is produced by Jess Sheldahl for Yellowstone Public Radio. Theme music composed and recorded by Zach Jones at Rapscallion Recording. Meadowlark Call captured by Jay McGowan for the Macaulay Library. Partial funding for The Worm is provided by the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montana. More information about The Worm is available at ypradio.org.